Grosvold swung at her, but the Krenkerin fended the blow with a deft motion of her arm, much as a knight might parry a sword cut. The two then controlled themselves, but stared at each other in the off-center sidelong manner their peculiar eyes allowed. "Did you expect to eat of my lord's largesse?" insisted Dietrich, "with no obligation in return? Has he not granted you food and shelter through the winter?"
"You mock us," said Grosvold,
shrugging off the hand that the Kratzer placed on his arm. "I did not know that Hans could act contrary to your orders," Dietrich said. "Is not obedience to one's sitting written into the atoms of your flesh?" The Kratzer, who had thus far showed his agitation by shaking in place, threw his arm to bar Grosvold.
"I will answer this, Geschäftel."
Dietrich noted his use of the diminutive. Among grown men it signified either endearment or condescension, and Dietrich thought the Krenkin incapable of endearment.
"Our flesh, Adams," the Kratzer said, "write for us an appetite for obedience to our betters. But as one who hungers may fast, so may we temper our hunger for obedience. We have a proverb that reads, 'Obey an order until you are strong enough to disobey.' And another, 'Authority is limited only by reach.'"
He bowed, a human gesture, toward Shepherd, who had gone to a corner of the room by herself.
"And much depend," Shepherd said, "on man who give order."
Geschert stiffened for a moment, then bounded suddenly from the parsonage, the door banging on its hinges as he departed. Dietrich said, "I understand," as he went to close the door.
"Do you?" said Shepherd. "It wonder me. Can man fast all time, or would hunger in end move him to desperation?"
The next day, on the feast of St. Kunigund, a riot broke out among the Krenkin. They raged against one another on the high street and on the muddy green, to the amazement of villager and garrison alike. Fist and foot and forearm dealt terrible blows and raised a clatter like sword play with dry wooden sticks. Frightened Hochwalders took refuge in church, cottage, or castle, so that work languished. Dietrich cried truce to the mob on the green, but the combat swirled about him like a stream around a stone. Pursued by four others, Shepherd bounded past him and up Church Hill. Dietrich hurried after, and found the pursuers pounding upon the carved oaken doors of the church, scarring the figures with their serrated forearms. St. Catherine had sustained a wound never delivered by her Roman tormentors. "Stop! For the love of God!" he cried, and interposed himself between mob and the precious carvings. "This building is a sanctuary!" A terrible blow laid open his headskin, and he saw a sudden dark and pinprick constellation. The door opened behind him, and he fell backward onto the flagstones of the vestibule, striking his already aching head against the stones. Hands seized him and dragged him inside. The door slammed, muffling the clamor of the mob. How long he lay dazed, he did not know. Then he sat upright, crying, "Shepherd!" "Safe," said Joachim. Dietrich looked around the dim-lit church, saw Gregor lighting candles, illuminating Shepherd and a number of villagers. The villagers had edged away from the Krenkerin, deeper into the building shadows. Joachim helped Dietrich to his feet. "That was well said," the monk told him. "Stop, for the love of God. You did not debate your dialectic." The pounding on the door had ceased, and Joachim went to the peephole and pushed the shutter aside. "They've gone," he said. "What madness has seized them?" Dietrich wondered. "They always were an ill-humored lot," Gregor said as he raised the lamplighter to touch a candle high on the wall. "As arrogant as Jews and nobles, that's twice they've beaten you." "Forgive them, Gregor," said Dietrich. "They did not know what they were doing. I put myself between their fists and their target, otherwise they ignore us." It was the estimative power of instinct, he guessed. From deep within the atoms of their flesh, the Krenkin did not esteem humans as friend or foe. Shepherd squatted upon the flagstones with her knees thrust over her head and her long arms wrapped around them. Her side lips clicked rhythmically, much as a person might hum to herself. "My lady," Dietrich said to her, "what means this riot?"
"Need you ask?" the Krenkin said. "You and Brown Robe cause it." Joachim had torn a strip of cloth off the hem of his robe and tied it round Dietrich's brow to staunch the blood.
"We the cause?" Joachim asked.
"For your native superstition, Hans turn natural order over."
"My lady," Dietrich said, "Hans acted for the common good to recover the wire from Falkenstein. It is the nature of men of all creation to pursue the good."
"Is nature of all creation to do as told? Told by authority or told by nature herself, that is what good man does. But Hans decide for himself what end good, not in course of duties, not by orders from betters. Unnatural. Now some say he act on orders from your lord from sky, whose authority exceed even Herr Geschert."
Joachim cried out, "Blessed be the name of the Lord."
Dietrich hushed him with a brusque gesture. "All authority is under God," he told Shepherd, "else authority would have no limits, and justice would be only a hare's will. But say on.
Now discord among us. Words run every way, like highspringers from pouncing swift jaw, not in orderly channels from those who speak to those who listen. As you cannot imagine, celebration inside head, of knowing one toils and one's besitting, touching upward, downward, all sides, link in great web. Neither can you know lacking within us when web is broken. The Kratzer compare it to hunger, but hunger, small thing."
She paused and buzzed softly. "Which one may bear with ease until it grow unbearable. But this lacking, like sit on bank of flood-swollen river with your word love-mate, with love-mates unreachable on farther side."
"Heartache," said Joachim unexpectedly. "The word you want is heartache."
"Doch, heartache then."
Gregor the mason had come to stand with them, and when he heard what Joachim had said, remarked, "They feel heartache, do they? It's little enough they show it."
"We have heartache for web wholeness," said Shepherd, "and would swim angry river to restore it. We have heartache for nurseland, you say Heimat, and its foods."
"But there are now heresies among you," Dietrich guessed. "Grosswald says one thing, Hans says another. Perhaps you," he suggested, "say a third thing."
Shepherd raised her mask-like face. "Hans go against Geschert words, but fault to Geschert that he not speak those words. Geschert'll say I too defy natural order, and mob high and low set upon me for that sin. But when two in discord may be both wrong, Geschert'll and Hans alike."
"Those who hold the middle ground," said Gregor, "are often attacked by both camps. Between two armies is a dangerous place to graze your flock."
"Discord," Dietrich said, "is a grave wrong. We must strive always for concord."
Joachim laughed.
"I come not to bring concord," he quoted, "but discord. Because of me, husband will leave wife, children will leave parents."
So do philosophers playing games with words lose sight of their plain meanings, which can be found always inscribed in the heart.
"A bit of discord here, too," said Gregor mildly.
Dietrich said to Shepherd, "Tell your folk that any who come to the church or who go to Manfred's court may not be attacked, for it is the peace of God that warriors may not attack women or children, peasants, merchants, artisans, or animals, nor any religious or public building. And by law and custom both, no one may strike another in a church or in a lord's court."
"And does this peace serve?"
"My lady, men are by nature violent. The peace is a sieve, and much falls through, though perhaps not as much as might otherwise."
"House wherein no blows may fall," Shepherd said, in a voice which might have meant cynicism or wistfulness. No thought